Reverend Al Hathaway.
Man, Martin, how you doing, man? This is a great time. We're here today. We're going to have another amazing conversation.
Yeah.
We're still discovering who's holy.
Look, I think that this young man with his Jesuit education and, you know, sort of the trials and tribulations of his life and the triumphs of his life are going to reveal a very holy
man. That's great.
Which is Van Brooks, who's here with us today in the Advanced Indoor Resources Podcast Central. He was doing a little video. You know, we're going to get ready to learn about his amazing journey.
Oh, man, that, I'm looking forward to it. I heard so much about him. Please, my brother, welcome to He's Holy, I'm Not.
That's Thanks right.
For having me.
And he is holy. Yeah. And I'm not, for sure. And we're pretty sure that you're headed towards holiness here. And so, Van, thanks for coming in, right?
Thanks for having me.
And no problem for you getting around, right?
Not at all.
You're driving and, you know, you made it into the, you know, parking lot here, no problem. Mm-hmm. And here he is.
That's
right.
Great. Oh, yeah.
And he's our first visitor on a wheelchair that keeps you going places. Mm-hmm. And your life, walk us back to this three sport athlete, Loyola Blakefield.
So I'm going to start back a little further than that.
Yeah. Great. Awesome.
So born and raised right over in West Baltimore. So literally not far from where we currently are, about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Started playing Pop Warner football there and, Poppleton, first team Poppleton Bears. And then from there, I moved over and started playing at Mount Royal. So I was at Mount Royal Eagles. Mm-hmm. So literally all right around the corner from here.
Right.
And then I went to private school. So my first school was St. Peter's Collegiate Father Charles, which is right up in Sandtown. Well, it's no longer there, but was in Sandtown on Pressman Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started playing basketball there. And then from there, when it came time for picking a middle school, my parents talked to the principal, lover. Kathleen Filippelli.
Yep. Know her.
She's, you know, she's awesome. Cowell Hall family.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And so she told my parents, Cowell Hall of Loyola, that was where one of the schools that I should go to. My parents, you know, Loyola was the first school that they set up the visit for, and that's where I ended up.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so I was there for middle and high school. And so once I got to Loyola, that's when my three-sport journey began, once I picked up lacrosse.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to run track, but my parents wanted me to play lacrosse for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
And so that's how I got stuck playing lacrosse.
Did you know that sport, lacrosse, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're known for football, I think, right?
Yeah.
But you also played lacrosse. What do you think about lacrosse? You like it?
I like it now. Back then I didn't, just because I was just learning the sport. So, you know, it's frustrating trying to learn a new sport where I've already been playing football and basketball. And then, you know, track for me was like, just keep me in shape.
Yeah.
But learning the sport of lacrosse was different. But my parents eventually found out they wanted me to play because there wasn't many black people playing.
Uh-huh.
And so they were saying, you know, if you get good at it, it's another option that you have for college.
Sure.
You know, everyone wants to play football and basketball, but lacrosse is a different avenue that you can go. So that's why they kind of forced me to play it.
Mm-hmm.
But they stuck me in the goal. Of all places.
Yeah. Wow.
I probably was the fastest person on the team when I was in the goal.
Right, yeah.
And that's why I wasn't for it.
Yeah.
And but eventually they took me out of the goal.
Uh-huh.
And I started playing mini and facing off, and that's when I really began to like the sport.
Like Fogo or whatever.
Yep,
it is,
I started as a Fogo, and then once you get a little stick skills, you don't listen to the coach when you win the face off, you go down and shoot the ball a little bit. If you play, you know how it goes.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I did start off once I got in, you know, facing off as Fogo.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what years were you at Loyola?
I graduated in 2006.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So take me back, what's that, 97?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 97.
Yeah.
I said it because my son was at Calvert Hall. He graduated in 2001.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's all doing that same time. Right? Mm-hmm.
And you got safe alternatives. You know, you're. Let's keep going through the story. I think because you know, not long after sort of establishing yourself as one of the better athletes on campus, you know, you had a tragic, you know, injury.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you walk us through that where that's brought you and anything you want to share with us about it, because I think it's an unbelievable journey from that point, right?
Yeah. So it was my junior year, and by this time I was growing into my body. You know, I was 6'1", 200 pounds. I was becoming the athlete that I wanted to become. That's all I focused on. And my dad used to always say to me, never put all your eggs in one basket. And so at the time, you know, I flex on him. Nothing's going to happen. You see this? We're going to the league. Nothing's going to stop me. And he used to say, okay, yeah, you're big and all, but, you know, you need to have a backup plan. And he used to say to me, you know, we're sacrificing a lot to send you to the school. And if we wanted you to play sports, we could have sent you to another school. But we are sending you here to get an education. And if football doesn't work out for you, athletics don't work out for you, you're going to need your education. And so my junior year, and it was a wild beginning of the season. I had broke my hand in practice. And so I missed a couple of games because I had a broken hand. And then eventually started playing with a cast. I think I played maybe two or three games with a cast. And then I literally, the game that I got my cast off was the game that I broke my neck. Going in for just a routine tackle and my head hit the runner's knee. And, you know, I felt like I was levitating at one point, but I also felt like I had a stinger, just a full body stinger. And for those who may not know what a stinger is, it's just when your body's tingling, like a body part falls asleep. And it's something common that happens in sports. You hit, you know, get hit the wrong way, fall the wrong way, your arm or leg starts tingling. So it was just that, nothing that I was too worried about. And then, I tried to get up and I couldn't feel anything. And then I saw a teammate try to help me up, didn't work. And then when the trainer was on the field, that's when I started to know something was wrong. But when I really knew something was wrong was when my mom was on the field. Now, funny, the story of that is funny a little bit, right? So when I first started playing football right here in Drill Park, I got tackled and I was at the bottom of the pile. I was playing running back. I was at the bottom of the pile and I could hear my mother yelling, get off of me, get off my son, get off my son. And in my mind, I'm like, she's really close. There's no way I should hear her this clearly. She was on the field pulling people off of me. Wow, right? Wow. So after that game, I told my mom, I say, listen, don't you ever do that again. Like, because I got clowned for years by my teammates. Like, you remember your mom ran on the field to help you, right? So I'm like, mom, don't you ever do that again. So for me to hear my mother on the field, I knew something was wrong. I knew it. And I can just hear the panic in her, right? And then I overheard one of the paramedics say I broke my neck. And then I was waiting for the helicopter to come to get me to take me to shock trauma. Yeah.
And from there.
From there, the new life began.
Yeah, that's right.
I was 16. Everything I had been working for up until that point was just football. And then I woke up, you know, in a hospital. And when I woke up, I couldn't talk, couldn't eat, couldn't move, nothing. And again, I don't know how long I was out because I had got rushed into emergency surgery. And I don't know how long I was out, but when I did wake up, my parents were standing at the door. Their back was to me. The doctors were talking to my parents. And I overheard, again, I'm always overhearing conversations. Your son's going to be like that for the rest of his life. Start to make arrangements. And I couldn't believe it. And I think that the fact that I was 16, I was naive. And I used to always think that if you broke your neck, you would die. And so for me, it's like, well, I'm alive. I'm going to bounce back from this injury like I did all the other injuries that I had. And up to that point, I think I had broken about 10 bones. And so it was, okay, I'll heal, I'll bounce back, and I'll keep it going. But no, that wasn't. No, I did heal. I did bounce back, but not in the ways that I expected.
Yeah. Further than you expected? You think you've made it? I mean, you're still working on it, right? Absolutely. And it's a work in progress, absolutely, right? So walking. I think I've seen some videos of you, you know, just, you know, training your body to do that again, right?
Yeah. So I wouldn't say further because the ultimate goal is always going to be walking. And in that case, though, when I was saying I thought I was going to bounce back like I did all the others, it's just because I wasn't out of commission no longer than a couple of months.
Right.
So now you're saying that I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life, depending on other people. For the rest of my life, that didn't sit well for me. And so, but everything that my parents have been saying to me up to that point was starting to come back to me. Never put all your eggs in one basket. And just like, I don't have a backup plan. You know, if football wasn't going to work out, I wanted to be a Navy SEAL, but I can't even do that now.
Right.
And so it was like, what do I do? And I had a really hard time. And just complete transparency, I tried to give up on life. Mm-hmm. And but you know, that's when I realized the power of the brain. It's because here I am laying in a bed. I was completely paralyzed, unable to talk. I couldn't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. And making a decision that I wanted to give up, my condition got worse immediately. Mm-hmm. And my dad had came in, and I say this all the time, my dad literally saved my life. He said that, and we had a unspoken, because I couldn't talk, so it was unspoken communication. And he knew something was wrong. He knew, like, you're trying to give up, and I'm not going to allow you to do that. And so I just found this out a couple of years ago. So he kind of ripped into me in the room, and he left out. And he went to the bathroom, and he said when he got into the bathroom, the stalls, the bathroom was clean. Everything was immaculate. And he closed the door to sit down and get his mind together, right? And on the back of the stall, he says the quote a different way. I don't think he remembers the quote, but a man is defeated when he loses. He's defeated when he gives up. That was a quote written on the back of the door. Mm. And he said he got up, ran in the room immediately and said, listen, a man is defeated when he loses. He's defeated when he gives up. And he said, God's going to do his part. I'm going to do my part, and I need you to do your part. And that literally saved my life. And from that moment on, I said, you know what? I'm going to accept this challenge. And no matter how hard it is, no matter how long it takes, I'm never going to give up on trying to recover and live the best life that I can. But again, that's when I realized how powerful the brain really is. You put your mind to it. And, you know, you hear that all the time as kids. You can do anything you think about, put your mind to. No, you truly can. Because in that moment, like I said, my life changed for the better. And I just dedicated the rest of my life to recovering and, you know, not letting this defeat me. Mm-hmm. And I eventually started taking classes. Once I was able to talk, I started taking classes in the hospital because at that point I had missed my entire junior year. Mm-hmm. But I was determined to graduate on time for my class. And so I eventually did graduate on time for my class. I actually started driving myself back to school my senior year. Oh, wow. Senior year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. So, yep.
Now, what lessons can you share with us around the power to overcome? I mean, the ability to overcome. First, you said you had to make a decision. Mm-hmm. But there had to be some other steps that went into your ability to overcome the situation you found yourself in.
I didn't believe what the people were saying. It started off as me trying to prove everyone wrong. I hate being the underdog. But it's also one of those things that brings the best out of me. If you say I can't do something, I'm gonna figure out a way to do it. And so it was just that. It was that in the beginning of, you said I can't walk again. You said I can't return back to school. You said I won't graduate on time for my class. These are the things that I'm just gonna continue to use to push myself through. But I also looked at it as the fourth quarter of a football game, just an extended game. And a lot of times the fourth quarter is when, to me, the games are won if they're close games. Conditioning. People aren't willing to endure what I'm willing to endure. I'm willing to go above and beyond no matter what it is to make sure we get to that goal. Mm-hmm. And if I don't get to that goal, at least I can say I gave my all and I can't be upset at myself. Mm-hmm. And so that's what was pushing me.
And then it sounds like so many ways these lessons of determination came through activities, sporting activities, mm-hmm. that you participated in as a young child, mm-hmm. right? And so really sports continuing to play a positive role through that, you know, original experience of not wanting to lose, mm-hmm. right?
It was sports. I would say the sports helped me hone in on that. Mm-hmm. But I think that some people just have it in them to never give up. Some people just have, and I think I might've been blessed with that, mm-hmm. of like, physically I can deal with anything. The biggest challenge is going to be me mentally. Mm-hmm. And once I got through it mentally, nothing can stop me. Mm-hmm. Nothing can stop me. No matter what happens to my body mentally, as long as I'm good, mm-hmm. I can keep going.
Yeah. What the mind can achieve, the body. What the mind can conceive, the body can achieve.
Absolutely.
You know, it's interesting, though. I think you should speak a little bit about your support system. Mm-hmm. Because I think I heard a mom, I think I heard a dad. I mean, why don't you just describe your support system?
I couldn't have done it without them. My mom and dad, of course, were the first. When I came to friends, I lost all my friends, which was a hard reality for me. I realized that they weren't friends, actually, right? When you are, and growing up in my environment, right, athletes are always on that pedestal. And when you are that athlete, people are going to take care of you. People are going to make sure you have whatever you need. People are going to make sure you're not getting into any trouble because you're going to be the one that make it out. And when that was taken away, the reality of it was is that a lot of the people that were there were just there for that. And so all I had was my family and my parents. And then I did have people step up, but people that I wouldn't have called us friends in the beginning. They were the ones that truly stepped up and were there for me in so many ways, so many ways. And they are my true friends till this day now, right? And so, but I did have that support system, mainly from my parents, though. My dad is that tough love person, right? He's that, I don't care about what you're going through, your pain, right? And I'm sure he cares, but he's like, look, get over it. Mm-hmm. Whereas my mom's like, oh, I'll take care of it. What do you need? I'll help you out, right?
Sure.
So I had that perfect balance of when I needed that love, my mom was there to be like, it's gonna be okay. Mm-hmm. Where my dad was like, get over it. Come on, we got work to do, right? I understand that you didn't feel good yesterday, but today's a new day, that's work. And I had asked him this one time before. I said, how did you get through my accident? Because he wasn't at the game. So I can only imagine my mom calling my dad while he's at work saying, hey, something happened to your son. You need to meet us at Shock Trouble, right? I can only imagine what that call is. And my dad was at the hospital every day, every night, and then was going to work. Wow. And that was his reality for years while my mom was the one there taking care of me. And I asked him, how did you get through? And he said, I did what I had to do that day to get through to tomorrow.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Day at a time.
One day at a time.
Yeah.
One day at a time. Mm-hmm. And so having that, again, that balance between them two truly helped me. Truly helped me.
You know, that's, I'm sitting there thinking about overcoming, and I'm hearing, one, the ability of the strength of mind. I'm hearing a support system. I think there's something else that should be spoken of, because a lot of people, their heart, it's that ability to sow, and I think you kind of mentioned it, that ability to still have that kind of emotional connection with yourself that says, I'm important, I'm significant, I'm going to continue to push on. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's another value that I'm hearing in your conversation is that, yes, I had the mind to it, I had a support system, but I'm important, I'm significant, I can overcome. And I think that's a general theme in this day and time because people give up too soon and not believing in themselves and their ability to overcome. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to commend you. I remember the story well now when I think about it, but I'm so happy to meet you and get that sense. And I hope the audience can hear this sense that you can make it, you can overcome. I say it this way, and I've said it in a spiritual sense, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world, meaning that you are not defined by your context, you're defined by your content, that which is in you, that which God places in you to allow that to shine and allow that to thrive, allow that to be seen. And clearly your story is a story that should give hope to anyone who might be faced with situations that they think are difficult.
The way I truly looked at it was I didn't look at the big picture of what I was trying to overcome. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I looked at, I need to be able to raise my arm to feed myself, right?
Right.
I didn't look at I want to walk and I want to walk in 3 months, right? I didn't look at that. Mm-hmm. I looked at what are the small steps within that goal that's going to help me get there. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what kept me going because it wasn't overwhelming to say, I'm trying to walk, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think had I only focused on the walking, I may not have gotten as far as I've gotten. Mm-hmm. Because the big picture is that it's going to take me forever, right? Mm-hmm. To get to that point. It's been 18 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How many people can go after something for literally 18 years?
Right.
Well,
always looking at the big picture. Mm-hmm. Now, I never lost sight of the big picture, but I appreciate the smaller things within that picture mm-hmm. that has helped me continue to keep pushing because it hasn't been easy.
Right.
You know, it hasn't been easy. I lost my faith. Mm-hmm. I've had my ups and downs, right? It's not easy at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't want people to think or look at my story and say, well, you know, he overcome and he's always smiling. He's this, he's that. No, it's, I've had more bad days than good days, right? Mm-hmm. I had more bad days than good days. However, I make a conscious effort every day to try to have a good day mm-hmm. and to try to appreciate the smaller things in life, the small movements, the small twitches that I may get in my fingers, just those small things that lets me know like, okay, mm-hmm. There's still a lot of work to do, but you're still making small progress.
Yeah, that's right.
And some progress is better than no progress.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like golf, Rob. You go out there and every five balls.
That's right.
You know, you hit one that's pure, yeah. right? And you know the feeling. And those little things that happen to you that, you know, are pure, mm-hmm. that are, you know, letting you draw energy to keep going forward, right? Because yeah. it is a challenge every day. And look, I think that's the... You know, also a lesson maybe this discussion is like, you know, look, you can't take anything for granted. Anything can happen. Your mm-hmm. buddy, my son, Riley, who's been helping you out with mm-hmm. Your nonprofit, he got him, you know, and you know Riley.
Sure, Rev. Yeah.
Riley invited Rev up to speak at Martin Luther King Day
at
Blakefield a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. But you know, he was in a little moped accident two mm-hmm. weekends ago and, you know, like banged himself up a little bit, but you know, like he's okay. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's a matter of inches, you know, mm-hmm. and millimeters and centimeters in those, you know, in those moments, you know, mm-hmm. and, for you, you've turned it into not just a positive story from a recovery perspective. But you've also, not only have you recovered and you're getting around and you're, you know, not limited as much as you were, you know, 15 years ago, whatever it was, 16, 15 years
18,
ago.
18.
18 years 18, ago, right? 18. Right? You've been moving around for 18 years. Mm-hmm. You've done other things, man. You got a nonprofit, mm-hmm. right? Safe Alternatives. I'd love to understand sort of where you came up with that name and what that means to you.
Yeah, that was placed on me. So the story behind it is I was 8 years into my injury. And one of those days, I didn't want to go to therapy, but it was a routine because I had been going, you know, I was doing therapy at one point 5 days a week, while I was still in school. So literally after class, go to therapy. And then when I got to college, I was doing it 3-4 days a week. But what ended up happening was just woke up, wasn't feeling it. Didn't feel that I was getting things back as quickly as I wanted to. I thought I kind of hit a peak in my recovery. And so when I go into therapy, I told my therapist, like, hey, I want to try to walk. And in the beginning, they weren't going to let me try. But then I was kind of like, you know, I'm about to check out. Like, I'm not coming back to this place anymore. But they let me. They let me. Long story short, they let me try. And I was able to take 3 steps on my own that day. And as the days continue to go, I was able to take more and more and more. And then like 2 days after, I woke up literally from a dream that said start a nonprofit. Mm. So it was placed on me. Mm-hmm. Start a nonprofit, had no prior knowledge of a nonprofit, didn't know anybody who had a nonprofit. I had just graduated from college, so I had time. And I just hopped on Google every day and was researching nonprofits, how to start a nonprofit, talking to any and everyone. And initially, the nonprofit was for athletes. And then a buddy of mine said, you know, don't limit yourself to just athletes. Because it was scholastics, athlete, scholars, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. It was still safe, but it had a different name. And they was like, you know, work with kids, work with everybody. And so the more and more I started to think about it, I was like, you know what? I can start in my backyard, working with middle school kids, teaching them the importance of having an education and a backup plan for life. Because when I was that age, all I focused on was sports. And when I look at TV, when I talk to kids in my community and in other communities like mine, the way out is athletics or entertainment. Mm-hmm. But what about all the other ways that you can make it out? What about all the other ways that you can make money? And I wanted to explore those things because for me going to Loyola, I had the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. I came to my community and I could see what my community had, but then going to Loyola, I can see, you know, what my classmates had, my classmates' homes and the cars they drove, and it was just the best of both worlds. I can see both. And for me, exposure leads to expansion. And when you know something else exists, that then you can start to strive for that. So, you know, how can you strive for something that you don't know exists?
Oh, yeah.
And so for me, it was like, I have all these experiences and this work was placed on me. I didn't choose it. You know, I didn't wake up saying, oh, hey, I want to, you know, this is a really good idea. No, this was, hey, you wake up and this is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was like, you know, let's go all in. And then, you know, the Jesuit education, Loyola, be a man for others. Mm-hmm. How do you be a man for others? Mm-hmm. And then when, you know, at my lowest point in my life, my injury, everyone stepped up for me. The Loyola community stepped up for me. The community as a whole stepped up for me. How do you thank everyone? Mm. You thank them by paying it forward. That's right. And so that's been my journey since.
Talk about Loyola and, you know, this Hardigan Field, right? Mm-hmm. Is where it happened.
No, actually, I wasn't at Hardigan.
No?
I was at Georgetown Prep.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in Georgetown Prep.
All right. So you away game.
It was.
Right? But the Loyola community, you're still really tied in. We'll talk in a minute about sort of the foundation of the work that you're doing with the with, you know, Loyola. But tell me about the part that community played in here.
Yeah, so they stepped up big time and had a huge event for me when I was injured. So many people, families stepped up to help my parents out during their times. And again, just a lot of really good relationships were formed out of this tragedy. Mm-hmm. And then once I started my foundation, Loyola, we have our annual fundraising event there, the biggest one that we have every year, our Boros. Mm-hmm. That's at Loyola every year.
Cool.
So Loyola has been supporting us since day one with the process, especially once I started the foundation. Mm-hmm. We do tutoring. So once a month, we go to Loyola. And they, you know, we have some juniors and seniors that tutor our students. Mm-hmm. And then that same group will come down to my center once a month.
That's pretty cool.
Our students there as well.
Where's your center located?
So we're on Lexington and Stricker, Franklin Square.
Okay, yeah.
So if anyone's familiar with West Baltimore, right behind Vivian T. Thomas, mm-hmm. across from Franklin Square Elementary Middle School.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just doing amazing stuff over there. I love that. I love the whole, and all three of my boys are, two of them have graduated from Loyola, and one is in there right now, Talbot. And, you know, I think that community is just so strong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can only imagine the role they played in sort of helping you, you know, with everything that you've been able to accomplish. I mean, you ended up graduating from there on time.
Okay.
I mean, you know, backflips and miracles. It's incredible, really, your journey. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'd be interested in learning about your college. You graduated from where?
Towson.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Towson University. So when I graduated from Loyola, I went to UMBC for 2 years. UMBC didn't have the major that I wanted at the time, so I transferred over to Towson to finish up there. So I finished with a degree in mass communications.
Oh, great.
And how's that playing a role today in sort of what you're doing at Safe Alternatives? Not much or?
No, a lot. Marketing and advertising.
Yeah.
Marketing, you have to get the word out about what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I can always fall back on that degree and the things that I learned in those classrooms. So I will say that going into the nonprofit space and founding this nonprofit and having that degree has helped me out tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
and you're thriving. You said that you're building a new facility mm-hmm. and expanding. Yeah. How many kids are you taking care of today?
So right now, we depends on the year. We talked about this off air.
Yeah.
When we are heavy with sixth graders, we typically stay around 12. When once we get past the sixth grade group, we'll go up to 20 in that current space right now. And the way that our model is designed to be small. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a Loyola classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, classrooms, I think when I was there, we had no more than 20. I think mm-hmm. we were around 15 to 20 students.
Yeah.
And the things that you're able to accomplish in a small group. And so we focus on the quality of what we're doing versus just working with a ton of students. Mm-hmm. Say we're working with students, we don't chase those numbers. We look at the outcomes and the quality that of services we're able to provide. But with us opening up the new center, which is going to be a workforce development center, we're going to be working with middle through the ages of 24. And so that whole thing is introducing our middle schoolers to different careers in the construction industry. And this is only through the workforce development center right now that I'm speaking to. Introducing them to different careers in the construction industry through Woodshop as the introduction. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to high school, we're actually going to be running a 3-week summer camp in June, the end of June, to begin to introduce high schoolers to different trades in the construction industry. And then when the Workforce Development Center opens, hopefully by the end of this year, the goal is quarter four, we're going to be going with up to 24 years of age. And so in the space, we're going to have a wood shop, mm-hmm. and then there's going to be classroom space. And so the goal is to create that pipeline from my community into the construction industry.
Yeah.
We're going to be training everyone that comes in, helping them with the soft skills, the technical training skills, certifications, and then linking them with employers who will be hiring them to go and do the work.
That's great. We've got the myself and Gino Gemignani, okay. another former member of our Governor's Workforce mm-hmm. Investment Board back in the O'Malley days.
Yeah.
Started a nonprofit called the Maryland Center for Construction Education and Innovation, MCCEI, which is trying to connect you guys, mm-hmm. your students to jobs in the industry. And massive, you know, like you're sitting in the office of a company that's like experiencing, you know, like the difficulties of not having a lot of, you know, people being directed towards the trades. Mm-hmm. Even though if you have like a master plumber's license,
yeah.
you can live anywhere on the planet.
Wow.
And you'll have work. But guaranteed.
Our kids aren't being introduced to the trades.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you're starting to see a shift now. Mm-hmm. There's a huge focus on career and technical education.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people are understanding that, as you were saying, trades. We need people in the trades.
Yeah.
And it's a really good option to college.
Mm-hmm.
And you're even starting to see some of the private schools make a shift of instead of only focusing on trying to get everyone into college, starting to say, okay, well, what about those, you know, that 20% that may not go to college, or what about that 20% who will go to college but then drop out?
Mm-hmm.
How can we prepare them and put them in the best, you know, position to be successful mm-hmm. when they leave here?
Mm-hmm.
So what are those post-secondary options that are best for the individual student? We're starting to see that a lot more now.
Yeah.
Very, very important. I mean, when I think about, I needed a plumber. I couldn't call a robot. You know, when I needed to have windows installed, you know, I needed that. And I just think there's so much opportunity because there's so much need
mm-hmm.
around real practical things. You know, and so it's great to hear that you're exposing young people to careers. The most important thing that I heard is that you're working with a group that you can see them through the cycle.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the most important thing. I'm glad you're not just counting numbers for numbers' sake. It really is quality.
Mm-hmm.
How can I take a person, shape a person, mold a person, have them understand the nuances of a particular craft or trade, and then see them through?
Mm-hmm.
That is so, so important, so significant. I commend you on that. I think one of the things, though, is that when I think about West Baltimore, I'm from West Baltimore myself. At one time, there were jobs in the community. I mean, you could go and there was a there was a factory of some sort. There mm-hmm. was, you know, how do you deal with the idea of, in that community, people not seeing people go to work? I mean, you know, that's another dynamic that's has occurred now. People don't actually see people going to work. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that?
So I think by just, you know, what we're going to be doing with the Workforce Development Center, when you have a center in a community that's strictly based around getting people going to work, I think seeing it, it makes it real, right? Because again, it goes back to, if you don't know it exists, how can you strive for it? If you don't see it, representation, right? Why would you strive for it? And so if someone can say, you know, I walk past the center every day and every day people are coming and going out of there trying to get jobs or trying to go to work or going to work, you never know what might spark someone in that community or a group of people in the community to say, you know what, I think I'm going to go in here and see what it's about. And it's kind of like that ripple effect. All it takes is one.
It is. All it takes is one. And I think people seeing people go to work versus people standing around doing nothing really reinforces that there is opportunity and options. I think one of the things that you are saying that is very important is that we need to create opportunity and options right in these neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So people can see them and understand that there's a pathway, there's a ladder to success.
Yeah, access. And as you say, opportunity. For me, that's what I had. Loyola allowed me to have opportunities and access to the people that I needed, to the places that I need to be to see, right? So that's in the simplest form, that's what we're doing. Providing opportunities and access, no matter how you look at it. Opportunities is to experience new things, to explore new things, to meet new people, to go into new environments, to have access to the things that you need to be successful. And then providing the network that can continue to follow you and help you along that journey, whatever journey it is that you choose. Mm-hmm. My dad used to always say, you know, once I teach you and expose you to these things, now it's up to you if you want to decide to go that way, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same concept that I'm doing. You know it's now available, and you know we're here to help you. And if you choose not to come through the doors, that's on you. But you can't say you didn't have an opportunity because we're right here in your face to provide it.
And it's right there. I mean, you're basically bringing the sort of the core of your Jesuit values to your community, right? Mm-hmm. The things that you had, access and accessibility and whatnot in the community. I love it.
I don't think you should skip over the Jesuit values.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about, what I'm hearing from man is that he had not only the academic training, but he also had a values training. And I think some kind of way we need to elevate values. Mm-hmm. Because in most instances, if you go into public schools, no one is talking to you about values. They're talking to you about a test that you need to take and preparing yourself for that take. But I think both you, Martin, and you, Van, I think to talk about Jesuit values. You say it, but what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. So it's wild because it was one of those things where I didn't know what it meant and I didn't appreciate it while at school. Mm-hmm. Because I'll break it down, the prayer that we say, the St. Ignatius prayer, right? Teach me to be generous. Well, that's the Serenity prayer. I'm sorry. The Saint, help me, Mark. Can you kick me off with the
No, I went to Calvin Hall. Look.
No, you should have said
my
that.
Kids.
Oh, my He's goodness. Not.
That's right. I'm not your guy for that one.
Oh my goodness.
No, we know.
Yes.
We,
so right, to give and not to count the cost, to fight not to heed the wounds, to exactly. toy, right, that, right? You get used to saying it. At least I did. I got used to saying it, but never sat down and said, what do these words really mean? Actually mean? And it wasn't until I sat down and I read the words and I looked at the words and said, what does this really mean? That I could now appreciate all the values that were being instilled in me while I was there. Right? What does it mean to give and not to count the cost?
Right. Wow.
Right? Like I say it, but what does that really mean? What does it mean to be a man for others? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to pay it forward? But when you think about all those three things, they're all connected. To give and not to count the cost, you're paying it forward, right? Someone helped you out. Now it's your job to give and not count the cost and be appreciative of the fact that you even had the opportunity or in a position to give, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's that. Mm-hmm. How can I continue to give? Because what I found is that the more I give, the more I'm blessed. And the more I'm blessed to give. Mm-hmm. How can I instill that? And this is the challenge. How do I instill that into a community in survival mode? That's the challenge.
That is the challenge.
Because it's easy to help someone understand that concept when they're not in survival mode. But when you're in survival mode and you're saying, hey, this is my last $10 and you're telling me I need to give this, right, or I need to give five of my last $10, no, not happening. Mm-hmm. Right? How do I get people to say, look, I promise you, right? Like, you just have to experience it. Mm-hmm. If you give it, you're gonna be blessed in ways beyond that $5 to $10 that you gave. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm always challenged with. But the values, absolutely. There were a lot of values that were instilled. And that's the biggest one that I focus on primarily, though, that to give and not to count the cost.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
That one.
Those Jesuit values, I got I had the Lasallian brothers over at Calvert Hall, right?
Right.
And then Christian Brothers, I should say.
Right.
Over at Calvert Hall. And they did a pretty good job of that. I mean, Loyola really makes it their mission and really instills that. I mean, I know my boys, you know, they are, you know, of that Jesuit tradition. And I think Loyola does an incredible job of that, you know. And Rev, you said something about not doing enough of that inside of our schools and that Loyola does it, but that's happening at City and a lot of other places, great institutions that, you know, maintain that culture.
You know, it's unfortunate that in the public school system they have this so-called separation of church and state, and as a result, to talk openly about values or to talk openly about prayer or meditation or those kinds of things is shunned. But they try to couch it in philosophy. They try to couch it in other kinds of language. But I think values. I mean, I come from a scouting tradition, so we had to learn the words of being thrifty, brave, clean, reverent, and all those. And you had to have meaning. And it not only did you have to have a definition of it, you had to now have examples of it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to teach values, to teach an example of it, and then teach something that a person themselves can emulate. Because one of the deficits in our culture today is a lack of value. Mm-hmm. People value things more than people. Mm-hmm. And it's very important that we shift that to where people begin to represent and respect others. Mm-hmm. That's why we had this high violence of violence, high rate of violence. People don't respect life. And life is so valuable. It's so important, so significant. And I think that you exude and you communicate very clearly how valuable this experience of life is, mm-hmm. however it might be, that you can still contribute, you can still give, you can still help, you can still be a part of the process that builds community. Yeah. That is that's a powerful statement to be able to say.
A lot of people don't think they can be a part of the process, though.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't think that because it's you know, I tell people, use what you have, right? Use what you have because it'll make a difference. And it may not make a difference in millions of lives, but it'll make it, one life is enough,
yeah.
Right? And so a lot of people don't get involved because one, they don't know how, mm-hmm. or they think that what they can offer isn't enough to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I try to tell people, it's like, I can only offer a little bit, but if I connect with you, you can offer more, and I can connect with you and you offer more. As three, we get one more person, we have a whole pie, mm-hmm. right? Now look what we can do. But sometimes, again, going back to that ripple, it starts with one person saying, hey, I have an idea and I want to do this. And I may not have everything that I need, but I have a part. Mm-hmm. How can we find the other people that can come and add their part? Mm-hmm. And so, now the starfish, are you familiar with the starfish?
Sure.
No? For the audience, and I'm going to paraphrase this, mm-hmm. couple walking down the beach, and there's starfish that have washed up onto the beach. And as they're walking down, the wife's throwing one back every time she comes across it, throwing it back. And husband says, why are you doing that? You know, look at all the other starfish that are out here. You're not going to make a difference. She picks one up and throws it in the water and said, I made a difference in the life of that one. Mm-hmm. Right? That's all it takes. One.
Yeah.
Just takes one. So that is one of the things that, another thing that I think we need to try to do more of. I mean, I agree 100% that values piece is there. I think we have lost that in a lot of our communities. So if we can begin to restore the values aspect of things, but then also help people understand that you can make a difference in your community, right?
Yeah.
I decided to do some work in my community. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. Just my community.
Right.
And look at how that has expanded. Mm-hmm. Just from me having a, you know, being placed with the vision and the idea and being willing and obedient to actually go out and do it. Wow. And then find the other people that can come and bring their piece of the pie, and now we have a whole pie.
Yeah. Oh, man. Now you're making a difference.
So I'm hearing driving around, nonprofit organization, building a new facility. What else you got on the horizon? What else is going on?
Oh, I have a lot going on. That's just the foundational side of things. But I also have some other stuff. I'm into real estate.
Okay.
But I'm tying in my passions for real estate and nonprofit together.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the new Workforce Development Center, again, we have so many vacant properties around. And so for me, it's how can we acquire the vacant properties, use those as the hands-on training facilities for those students that we're going to be working with,
mm-hmm.
having them literally fix those buildings up before ever going to an employer. So that way, when they do go to an employer, they can say, hey, you see that house there? I went in there and I did the electric in there, mm-hmm. right? This is where I learned how to do those things. And so what's happening is we not only are they getting the skills, the hands-on experience and the skills they need to gain that employment, the community is getting a refurbished house that can now, you know, be turn a blighted neighborhood into a, you know, revitalizing neighborhood. And then on top of that, the rent that will come off of will go back into the program to continue to build up and provide opportunities to other people. So how do we create that wheel of sustainability mm-hmm. while helping everyone along each step of the process?
That's so cool. Yeah. I love it. Ben Brooks, huh?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's all
what
right.
What a story. What
that
a life.
That is a tremendous story. I love the optimism. I love the sense of overcoming. I love the reality of dealing honestly with life and allowing life to exude through you and then to help someone else. That's a powerful, powerful story. In fact, I got to come past Stricker Street. I got to come down that way. Got to check you out, see what we can do. I have a little history in renovating houses myself and connecting mm-hmm. people to that. So,
and there's a lot of workforce stuff that's getting ready to happen in that area with PS 103.
Oh,
right?
Yes. There's going to be a lot of work. Plus, I mean, the area that you're in, there's a major investment coming from LifeBridge. There's a lot going on in the area that you're going in.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I think I kind of, if there's something to leave with, I think there should be a sense of optimism in our city around when you look at the totality of our city. There's activity happening literally all over our city
mm-hmm.
in neighborhoods that are very positive. There's some negative things, yeah, but you can point to there's some positive going on. Look at Stricker. You talk about Stricker Street with that evolution. I look at Harlem Park with what's going on there. Yeah. I look at Park Heights with what's happening there. Mm-hmm. You can mm-hmm. look throughout the city, and you can see that there's activity and investment happening in local neighborhoods, and it's being done by people in those communities.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing. If we can communicate
raise
anything,
that up.
Is that we can communicate anything to people, allow the people that are in the communities, one, to be the beneficiaries, to be the developers, to be the program managers, and to be the ones that conceive of what's best for their neighborhoods and invest in that.
I think I heard that from John Brothers, too.
Yes, we did.
Right? You know, that's a message that we're hearing, and it keeps getting repeated, which is, you know, like, let it happen on the ground.
That's right.
Right there where the rubber meets the roads, and make sure that all those people are included.
Yeah. And I think that's key. But for so long, and this is honestly where part of the idea for the Workforce Development Center came from, is because I would hear stories of these developments are happening in the community, but people aren't trained to take the jobs to fix or to be a part of the construction crews,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like, we see it right there across the street, but we can't participate, mm-hmm. right? Or everyone can't participate, right. or everyone doesn't have the option to participate.
That's right.
But I look at it as now we have a center there.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the option, right? So it's like, how do we remove all barriers?
Right.
Right? How do we remove, the construction is happening right there across the street. We have a center that will train you and then help you get on one of those crews to do that work, right? You no longer have a barrier or have an excuse to say, well, I don't have the access to the training or any of that, right? I think that I think for so long, though, that was the piece that was missing. Because we do see construction happening everywhere.
Oh, my goodness.
But are the people in those communities, are they being shipped out?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they actually having the opportunity to participate in that?
Yeah.
To have a job to participate to then, because, you know, when new construction happens, prices go up, right?
Yeah.
But if you have a job working, you now can hopefully be able to afford to stay in your community and not be shipped out somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right? Shipped out. I don't like that. That's the wrong word to use, shipped out. But to be able to remain in your community where you grew up and you live, because we see gentrification happening so much right now.
Yeah.
How can we, you know, build our communities, but also keep the people that live there?
Absolutely. Well, there's plenty of work to do.
Plenty of work.
And more, you know, to come. Van Brooks, nothing stops this guy.
Oh, no, that's so good.
What an inspiration. Your story is awesome. And what you're doing with your life is amazing.
Thank you.
And thanks for doing all you're doing for Baltimore, making it an incredible place. And, you know, these are like the little nuggets that, you know, are discovered at He's Holy and I'm Not.
Yes, it is.
And hopefully our audience will sort of, you know, be able to grab onto what you're doing. And a lot of people in the nonprofit industry out there listening here today. And it's going to be awesome to just watch you keep doing what you're doing and expanding in a place where we sure need it, don't we?
Yes, Rev? We do. We need sunshine.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're bringing, Van Brooks is bringing sunshine to our city. And I'm telling you, sunshine reflects holiness.
Yes, right. And so there you are, Van. You know, not everybody makes it out of here.
That's right.
With the halo.
That's right. Right.
And in the picture, there's one with a halo and there's one that's not.
Yeah.
And so anyway, thank you for coming in here today and sharing your story and for everything that you're doing in our great city. And we want to have you back when you get that thing opened up and just talk about it and try and connect you to more people so you can keep doing amazing things.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right.
That's great. Thank you, Dan.
No, thank you.
Take care.
You too.